Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 26th, 2017. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
All right, well, we've got plenty to talk about this evening. Here in just a little while, we are going to have Tom Jensen to tell us, put a lot of his politics with some recent poll numbers he's done and then others he's studied. But until then, there was kind of like a triple whammy this weekend, and we'll start off with Friday. Of course, there was the health care no vote and all of the fallout from that. This past week and into the weekend, the Russia story got more news with James Comey and Michael Flynn in different ways. And then finally, a little story we had talked about it the other week with the Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, coming over, no handshake. Well, we may have found out why things got so contentious, because Donald Trump's given invoices out like he's, like there was a bill due. Like he runs a hotel maybe or something at the end of the stay. I don't know. But we'll talk about all of that and maybe a few more things, because everything seems to be tied together into the Trump presidency and what a absolute disaster it's been getting off to. But let's start, I guess, kind of we have to, with the health care vote. And the Republicans, they were going to present a bill. They pulled the bill. They decided they were going to put it back on Friday. They had to pull the bill again, in pulling the bill, they pretty much, whether it was Speaker Ryan, Donald Trump, whomever, they conceded defeat. It was Obamacare will continue to be the law of the land. Of course, they thought that it was a bad thing. I noticed that the Democratic Party, with Nancy Pelosi and others, Elijah Cummings, and I was on the stage, it was a group of 25 Democrats all in the picture, whereas Paul Ryan, they sent him out there by himself to talk about defeat. That was looked at as a victory. Catherine, what are some of your initial thoughts on what went down Friday?
Well, I think I was watching the news I was watching Anderson Cooper on Thursday night while they were in conference, and all the media was, hanging out outside the conference room waiting for the conservative Freedom Caucus to come out of that meeting with the president. And it was definitely political theater. They were all waiting and waiting, and then the congressman came out, but they would not even look at the press. They just kept walking. I've never seen congressmen so unwilling to talk to the press. Usually they're, wanting to get on camera, but not that night. It was really kind of amazing. We talked about this before we went on the air, and I was convinced that Donald Trump had sort of instructed Paul Ryan to pull the bill, and then I was surprised when Ryan came up and said, he kept saying, I decided to pull the bill. But after talking about it, it may be, y'all may have the right tone that it was really the president not understanding the congressional process and wanting him to extend the vote or to hold the vote. So I'll let you guys make that argument. I'm relieved. I think that on a number of levels, I'm relieved that they didn't get that ridiculous bill passed, even though I don't think it would have made it through the Senate, but it could have gone back into conference and we could have ended up with some horrific thing. So I'm relieved that we have Obamacare, at least for the time being. I don't like to see government not functioning, except that with these characters, you know, the best thing might be for them to get nothing done because it seems like what they want to do is all bad for the American people. So I think, you know, we had a little bit of celebration, I guess I should say, with some of my friends yesterday saying, okay, or Friday, saying, okay, well, we made, by making no progress, we made some progress, I guess. But what do you think, Tim?
7 years. That's the first thing comes to my mind. 7 years they had to plan something. For 7 years, they've been running on repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. That's they in every election. That's been a prime consideration, a front row issue. Then they came up with the AHCA, and the president doing little or nothing to build any consensus. Now think about this. President Obama took 18 months to do that, to shepherd the ACA through Congress. 18 months. This crew here spent every bit of 17 days on their bill. Never before have I seen a president lose his first major piece of legislation like this. Never. And, of course, the blame game's on. Trump blamed the Democrats. So
I love that.
Let's think about this. There was 433 people voting. There was 240 Republicans and 193 Democrats. And so it was the Democrats' fault that the Republicans didn't get enough votes when they had 47 more. Most conservative media, another thing that struck me, is they're making Ryan the boogeyman, but a lot more so than Trump. As a matter of fact, the Freedom Caucus is taking more hits than he is. But just think about this, guys. More than 60 symbolic votes they had since 2010 to repeal Obamacare. And then when they had everything and nothing was in their way, they couldn't even muster the votes for a floor vote. My goodness. David, why don't you take over here? I don't know what else.
I know. There's so much. And one of the shocking things that that I heard about just a little piece was the deal between Donald Trump, the House leadership, and upstate New York lawmakers. Like, they had a deal where upstate New York would have gotten a completely different pay structure on Medicaid and other things than the city of New York. And it was like, that's seemingly so unfair no matter which side of the aisle you come from. And that's the kind of crazy stuff they had to come with just to try to get this bill passed. And you mentioned the Freedom Caucus taking a hit. It will be interesting to see what happens there, because I'm sure a lot of people, once again, they didn't know who the Freedom Caucus was until this time. And does that Freedom Caucus label either make you in the party, oh, man, that means they're the most conservative, and we love the most conservative, whatever it is, or does that look like a bunch of obstructionists and nobody wants to be affiliated? And I wonder, when it comes to the special elections, the two coming up, one in Montana and one in Georgia's 6th District, does a politician run as like, I'm going to be with the Freedom Caucus, or does somebody run against the Freedom Caucus as a bunch of do-nothings? And how do people at the ballot box that are Republicans, how do they view that? I think that's going to be interesting. Catherine, any inclination, like, will Karen Handel or Dan Moody or Judson Hill, will they be pro or anti Freedom Caucus, or they just want to avoid the whole topic?
I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that, because it should, I mean, we should see something develop over the next few days, really. I mean, they only have till April 18th, so they've only got a couple weeks to, formulate their arguments or their, regarding this.
Catherine, a question. quick question for you, Catherine. Did I read correctly that they start early voting over there tomorrow?
That should be right, right? That sounds right.
Yeah, it seems like it would be.
Yeah. But let's remember that the Freedom Caucus is really, I mean, by rights, isn't that all the Tea Party people? I mean, didn't they just change their name?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new name, and I mean, and I don't even really know. I know Barry Loudermilk apparently was in it, but said he kind of taken a back seat. Tom Poe from Texas actually is resigning Freedom Caucus. I don't know much about Tom Poe. If they're losing members instead of gaining them, I wonder if a bunch of phone calls came in, you know, over the weekend and said, well, you need to get out of this thing. Because I do know that they said the phone calls were just like 9-1 against the American Health Care Act. I want to make sure I get the right name on it. It was very unpopular.
But the thing is, I read a pretty extensive article about that, and, you know, it sounds good, and I'm sure that it's accurate, but some of the Republicans, a lot of Republicans, are not reporting the calls. So that's like the number of the calls that are being reported. Like if a reporter calls and says, you know, what kind of the Democrats are happily reporting that they're getting, you know, 10-1 calls against ACA, as I like to call it. But the Republicans aren't reporting their calls. So, I mean, I think there's a great, I don't think people, the general public likes this bill, but I think we need to be careful about using those numbers because I don't think they're fully accurate.
I agree that could be skewed a bit, but then there's another number. 17% of voters approve of this health care bill. That was a random scientific sample, not, you know, who's reporting. That was just, now, of course, there's a margin of error in there, but 17% is not a great number. So
no,
this thing is probably on its best day, maybe 33%. Not exactly what we start repealing a bill that seemingly poll after poll has gotten over 50 now, talking about the Affordable Health Care Act, for a bill that then, you know, maybe a third of the voters like. And so obviously, you know, the pure political will of the people was not with this thing. That's probably its biggest problem. It wasn't. Did Trump like it? Did Ryan like it? The American people didn't like it, Tim.
Now, what about the fallout? You guys know who Jeanine Pirro is on Fox.
I did until last night.
Oh, she's a real sweetheart, that one is. But anyway, she comes on, and she just says right off the bat, well, you know what? Ryan needs to go. He needs to resign. He needs to be forced out, fired, whatever. But he needs to go. This is all on him. This is all his fault. None of it is President Trump's fault. The next thing you know, we have the great orange one taking his early morning bathroom break. And what does he do on that? He tweets. And what is he tweeting? Hey, check out Jeanine Pirro's show.
God.
It's a great show. I mean, it's just as good as saying, you know, get over there and see what she's saying about Ryan. I agree with it without actually saying he does agree with it. And then later on, his staff, of course, said what the president really meant. Ha, ha, ha. You know, how many times is that such as that going to go on? And is the Republican Party right now holding its breath, David, to see what's going to happen?
Well, and then I did see, speaking of that tweet, that, you know, even – Dana Bash on CNN said, you know, according to my sources, that, you know, the president didn't know that she was going to say that. Well, if he didn't, why in the world is he just randomly promoting shows, the least watched night of television? I mean, that's, I would think Saturday night would be the one night where even the hardcore Fox superstars like O'Reilly and Hannity aren't on. So to me, I think he had to. Oh, he had to know.
Immediately after she said that, he's promoting that show. Oh, good grief.
Well, no, he tweeted it beforehand.
Yeah.
It was a promo tweet ahead of him.
It's like when Fox and Friends gushes about him, and all of a sudden he goes talking about how much he likes that show. It's like when he talks about what a great guy Sean Hannity is, and the next thing you know, Hannity's having him over there with a live audience who, of course, is handpicked and gets up and gives him a standing ovation and all this stuff.
Sean Hannity is like his little laptop.
Well, let's get into Sean Hannity, but real quick, I can't wait till he tweets about how much he likes the Cather Cowboy that John Oliver's show is putting commercials on during Fox shows. But did y'all see the report that it was kind of early midweek that Donald Trump had an idea that, you know, Sean Spicer, he's part of the problem. Maybe he's not the whole problem, but he's part of the problem. And so we need to get rid of the messenger. And Sean Hannity, man, he's strong. He would, you know, really speak to my vision. And he wanted Sean Hannity to be the press secretary. And Sean Hannity wisely declined because it's so strange. Because just because you have a TV show doesn't mean that you have the experience to be the press secretary. They're very different jobs from, you know, running your own opinion show. As opposed to understanding how to handle the media. And, of course, I'm sure there'd be a significant pay cut involved because I don't think the American government would pay the press secretary what I'm sure he makes on his Fox show and would also have to give up in speaking appearances. And doesn't he write books? You know, he's got a radio show every day. I mean,
well,
he makes well over $1 million.
No, he makes something like $28 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, it.
$29 million, that's what he made last year. Plus, he's provided with a private jet. And he's going to, this thing about Spicer, the rumor that Trump wanted him out and handed in, would he trade that for $180,000 salary to stand up there and repeat someone else's talking points to a room full of hostile press and work 18 hours a day? You know,
he does not have the temperament for that job. He just doesn't.
Yeah, well,
neither does Spicer.
Well, I think Donald Trump is like some kind of debater, and you debate the press, but it's a totally different situation. You have to have some skills there on your feet, and you really just try to give out, you know, in some cases, as least information as you can. You have to craft very careful statements. And just say, and by the way, I guess Sean Hannity at $28-29 million, the world's highest paid hot air balloon. But just to think that he would give all that up. I mean, A, does Donald Trump have no clue what Sean Hannity makes a year? Or B, does he think he's just the world's most wonderful patriot that would jump on the Titanic of presidential administrations for that? I mean, I just find that baffling he would even do that.
Just because the president said that, doesn't mean it was a serious like job offer. It may have been, you know, like, haha, wouldn't that, he's got a good, and then it gives Sean Hannity the opportunity to say, oh no, I wouldn't do that. So it's like a little feather in his cap that he was offered this position, even though everyone knows he wouldn't take it. You know what I mean? It's like a fake out.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, that'd be like a chef, some, you know, world-renowned chef, and you'd be like, man, that, you know, school cafeteria, it's just not doing good. Maybe if we could get Wolfgang Puck to run it because he just cares about the children. I mean, that's as nonsensical as this. I mean, you know, big pay demotion for a good government service job.
I mean, pretty much everybody who, you know, goes to the White House – from, you know, from the business world anyway, and even some of the people who come from the private sector take pay cuts to, you know, to serve the country. I mean, it's not uncommon. But I doubt very much that there was really ever a belief that Sean Hannity would take that position.
Yes. Well, let's go ahead and move on to our guest. And Tom, Tim informed me before we went on the air that there's a big basketball game that you have a very rooting vested interest in. Is that game over?
16. No, it's not. So you have me live during like the most stressed out I've been since election night.
Okay. Since I'm
talking to you, I have to keep it together. So maybe you're helping me out.
Well, and I will tell you, I've been Tim and I've both been on like during the overtime of Falcon games and stuff. So we know the feeling.
And they make me come on during Academy Award night while I'm, you know, while the red carpet's on. So
what did you all do when the Falcons were in the Super Bowl? I hope you didn't have a show during the middle of that.
Oh, we went early. We go early when it's football. Even when the Saints were on, I think we went early. I don't know why. We probably should have a show during that. Well, since we got y'all, let's use your time valuably. And I know you've done some recent national polls, but I'm going to go a different direction for my question. Then I'm going to pass it to Tim and Catherine, and I may come back for some more. I sent you a graphic that showed all these Donald Trump scandals, whether it's, you know, Russia, him using Twitter at strange times, you know, whatever it is. And every single one of those issues hurt him as much as 20-something points with the general public. Yet with his voters, it would help him anywhere between 2 and 20-something percent. Now, I think back to, like, you know, the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Now, I didn't think that should remove President Clinton from office, but it didn't make me like him better. What in the world's going on that so many of these Trump voters actually net approve of, you know, all these different negative issues that have come up?
Well, there's really almost nothing Trump can do that his supporters will abandon him on. I mean, one thing that we found that was interesting on this most recent national poll that we did was we asked people, for instance, if they thought that Obama tapped Trump's phone, and like 60% of people, 60% of the Trump voters said yes. So it was definitely a situation where he said something like that. Oh, my God. Sorry. Basketball game. And about everything that he does, people just go along with him like that. And it was something that we – a dynamic that we saw during the campaign.
Oh, my God. Basketball game.
I guess we're a little ahead of you in North Carolina. at least on when the basketball game comes in, not on politics. But something that we repeatedly found during the primaries last year was that every single time there was a controversy and Trump said something controversial, his supporters just said they agreed with it. One thing that was really infamous along those lines was when he said that he'd seen thousands of Arabs in New Jersey celebrating 9/11. That was something that wasn't true. But when you asked his voters about it, like 70% of them would say, yeah, I saw the Arabs cheering in New Jersey on 9/11. And then another thing along those lines that came up over the summer in the campaign was Trump said he'd seen the video of the U.S. handing over $400 million to Iran. And Trump actually ended up having to say that he'd been mistaken and he didn't really see that. It was the very rare thing that he actually admitted that didn't really happen. But the damage had been done. We found the next week that 50% of Trump voters said that they had seen the video of Iran handing out over $400 million, even after Trump himself had debunked that. So what I've sort of compared the Trump people to over time is that it's really almost something akin to a cult, where whatever he says, people go along with it, and it certainly doesn't make them feel more negatively towards him. But I'll tell you all, from our national poll, the one thing we found on this last one that his supporters disagreed with him on is him putting ketchup on steak. His supporters said they could not condone that. Like 30% of them said it was okay, and like 50% said it wasn't okay. So that's literally like the one thing we found that the Trump people go against him on is putting ketchup on his steak.
But you know why that is, Tom? Because those Trump steaks that come in that box, you know, they were freeze-dried 7 years ago, they're such wonderful meat that even the Trump voters know that they need no extra seasoning like ketchup because they're so bigly and tremendous. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Catherine and Tim quick, because usually I ask all the good questions up, and I'm not going to do that tonight. I'm going to let Catherine ask questions, Tim, and then whatever's left, they can come up to me. Catherine?
Hi, Tom. I'm sorry we're interrupting your watching of the basketball game. I can totally relate, even though I'm not a sports fan, but I can totally imagine how you're feeling.
No, it's fine. We're about to win, so.
Okay, good. I read through the questions that you asked, and I think my favorite one was everybody wants, well, not everybody, but the majority of people want Barack Obama to be president.
Definitely something that we've very consistently found since the election is it's a really interesting dynamic where the closer Obama got to leaving office, the more and more and more that people liked him. We saw throughout his whole last year that Obama's approval ratings, which really weren't that great throughout most of his second term, just kept on ticking up and up and up as people were seeing that they were going to have a new president. All of a sudden it was like, oh, you know, we actually kind of like who we have. And the sentiment about that really kind of shifted a lot. So that's something that we've consistently found since the election is that people wish that they could keep Obama instead of Trump. And one
Buyers
thing that
more.
Has absolutely and it's a similar dynamic to what we've seen in Affordable Care Act polling. Just as how Obama got more popular once people started to see the alternative, the Affordable Care Act got more and more popular as people started to see the Republicans sort of rolling out their health care plan. So at this point, talking about the Republican health care plan almost seems pointless because, you know, it's sort of over. But it was a situation where, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, you'd find that only about 40% of voters supported the Affordable Care Act, about 50% opposed it. Now we're generally seeing the inverse of those numbers. Now about 50% are in support and only about 40% are opposed. So it's definitely something where we've seen that pendulum shift quite a bit as voters have started to see the alternative. And we found in our polling on – oh, go ahead.
I think it's also that they're getting those people that are using the Affordable Care Act are, you know, learning about how it works and seeing how it benefits themselves or people that they know. I think the first reaction could have been negative because they didn't understand it. But now that now that it's becoming part of the fabric of our healthcare, we're like, oh, okay, I get it now. You know, so I think that helps too. But anyway, go ahead. You were finishing up.
No, I agree with what you just said, which is something that was said sort of all along when the Affordable Care Act was going through the process and it wasn't very popular, was you would always find that, you know, Democrats would kind of say that, well, it's not popular now, but once people actually see it in action, it's going to become popular and they'll get a lot more favorable towards it. And that's definitely a dynamic that we did end up seeing where, you know, once it actually went into place and people saw that it was working, all of a sudden it got to be a lot more popular.
So were there any big surprises in this poll that you know, sort of unexpected results that surprised you?
One thing that I wouldn't necessarily say was unexpected, but that I found interesting is that people are getting increasingly concerned about Trump and the Russian ties. We've been polling now for a while on what people think about having an independent investigation into Trump's ties to Russia, and we're seeing support for that go up. 63% of voters support it now, only 28% are opposed to it. And that was something where sort of earlier on in the process, we were finding that people were sort of like, what's the big deal with the Russia thing? And more we're finding that voters do think that the Russia thing is kind of a big deal. There was a lot of polling that came out like right after the election or during the election where it would ask, do you think that Russia is trying to influence the election for Trump? And people would say no. I think that was something that people hadn't really come around to. But when we asked about it on this poll this week, 60% of voters said that they thought that Russia wanted Trump to win the election. 16% said they wanted Clinton to win. But that's a pretty high number now to have up to 60% of voters who think that Russia wanted Trump to win. And I think because of that influence that voters perceive Russia to have had, that's why you see this increasing support for an investigation and increasing concern about the issue. And and then another piece of that, I think, is another piece that was sort of interesting about this, going back to David's initial question about Trump voters sort of going along with everything he says and that kind of thing. We actually found that among Trump voters, more think that Russia wanted Clinton to win the election than think that Trump that Russia wanted Trump to win the election. 30% of Trump voters think that Russia wanted Clinton to win. Only 28% think that Russia wanted Trump to win. So that's another sort of part of that mentality where you see that there's not a lot of reasoning with it, no matter how clear the evidence may be to the contrary. That's where it is.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to pass it to Tim, who's then going to pass it back to David, I think, after he's done.
Yes. Good evening, Tom. And let me go ahead and lose about a third of our viewing audience or our listening audience when I say, on behalf of you, take that, Ashley Judd, right? ACC. Oh, it's a great conference. You people out there that are listening, Tom and I will be in the same stadium on September the 30th if you want to see us there. So anyway, your polling, one thing that struck me was it showed that Jeff Sessions has like a 30% approval rating. Now most voters can't even tell you who the attorney is. Who the attorney general is, but obviously he has been front and center in the news. Is the thing with the Russians what's taking him down, Tom?
Yeah, I think that before that whole flap about 3 weeks ago with Sessions and his ties to the Russians, if you had polled about Jeff Sessions, nobody would have heard of him. So for most Americans, I think that the whole Russia story is their first exposure to Jeff Sessions, and obviously that's not something that makes a particularly positive impression. Only 30% of voters see him favorably, 43% see him unfavorably. And then one thing I was kind of surprised to see is that a plurality of voters already think he should resign as attorney general. 44% think he should step down. Only 38% think that he should continue on as attorney general. So that's clearly something that I think, gave voters a problem with Sessions. But more broadly and more importantly than that, I think the Sessions stuff played a big role in turning the Russia issue overall into something that became much more of a liability for Trump than it had been before. I think, it's one thing when Mike Flynn, was involved in it and they got him out of there pretty quick. But to have the attorney general, which is a position that I think most Americans are aware of the existence of, they know that the attorney general is a big deal. To have the attorney general have those kinds of ties to a foreign country like that, I think really gives people concern.
And if this administration didn't have enough problems, then there's everything that hit them Friday with that debacle
of a non-vote, the public, according to your polling, simply did not support the American Health Care Act at all. Like 24% approval, I think, is what you showed. So why?
We found 24%, and then when Quinnipiac went in a week later, it was down to 17%.
Yuck. So why did the Republicans in Congress so doggedly push passage of this thing with basically no base of public support?
Well, I think they, you know, spent 6 years talking about how they were going to repeal Obamacare, so they thought if they spent 6 years talking about how they should do something, maybe they would actually try to do it. But, you know, clearly they finally realized that that wasn't a very good idea. And even though this certainly was a huge defeat for Republicans on the health care mm-hmm. stuff, I think it has to be a little bit of a relief to some of the individual members that they ended up not having to vote on that, because it's definitely just the fact of the matter that in 2010, a lot of Democrats who had voted for the health care bill ended up losing their seats, with that being a major issue contributing to their losses, and Republicans at least avoided having that kind of thing happen to them. But they also then put themselves in a position of looking like they just can't get anything done at all. And if the president mm-hmm. has an approval rating in the 30s when midterm time gets around and the Republicans don't have any accomplishments to point to when they've had a completely unified government, I'm not sure how that's going to sort of play out with them for voters who come out for the elections next year. And I think another interesting piece of that, and a way to sort of think about it big picture, is you almost always in your first midterm of a new presidency – you know, have a hard time and lose some seats. Democrats in 2010, when they got wiped out after doing that, at least they'd done a lot in 2008, between 2008 and 2010. Maybe some of their mm-hmm. voters didn't respond to that positively, at least in the short term, and it didn't help them at the polls that year. But the Republicans may end up having that same sort of tough midterm without having a whole lot of accomplishment to show for it.
Uh-huh. I want to ask you about one more thing, then I'm going to throw it back to David. You were mentioning the president's approval rating, and it really took a nosedive when the wiretapping tweets started coming out. Now, what is your polling showing about this wiretapping stuff? Has he recovered any from that, or has he compared to President Obama with it, or –
Sure. Well, voters certainly don't believe the wiretapping thing. We found that only 27% of voters think that Obama really tapped Trump's phone. 56% don't think that's true. Obviously, Trump and Obama have made conflicting statements on this issue. We asked people who they believed. Obama won out 54-39 in terms of who people trust more to tell the truth about this kind of thing. And mm-hmm. what's really interesting, you know, I think that Trump's approval rating has generally been in the 43-44% range until the last few weeks. It's all of a sudden dropped down to 39-40%. And I think what's really hurting him on that is the healthcare stuff, because what really distinguished the healthcare stuff being so unpopular was that even Republicans didn't like it. We found that only 37% of Republicans wanted to do Trump's plan on health care. 22% were opposed, so pretty tepid support really for that. And the reason that Trump had been holding up with an approval rating in the mid-40s was that very few people who had voted for him were abandoning him. He was unpopular because obviously he only got 46% of the vote in the first place, and nothing that he's done since he took uh-huh. office has made uh-huh. people who didn't vote for him all of a sudden like him. But he was still holding up almost everybody who did vote for him. We'd find that among Trump voters, Trump had a 90-95% approval rating, that kind of range. And in mm-hmm. some of these polls that have come out, Quinnipiac and Gallup in the last week, where Trump's dropping down to the 30s, the reason you're seeing his numbers drop down to the 30s is that finally some of his own voters are starting to get really skeptical of some of the kind of stuff he's doing So where his approval rating had been 90-95% with people who actually voted for Trump in the election, now in some of these polls you're seeing it down more into the 80-85% range. And again, I think that healthcare is the first issue that Trump's really taken on, where we've seen a lot of voters kind of skeptical about a lot of Trump's own voters kind of skeptical about what he wants to do. And I think that's where you're starting to see some of these lower numbers. We're going to do another national poll this upcoming week, and I'm going to be really interested to see where things are, like the generic congressional ballot. We've generally been finding Democrats up by like 4 or 5 points on that. If Democrats were going to get back control of the House next year, they'd probably have to win that generic congressional ballot by 8 or 9 points. After this huge failure of House Republicans, is that driving down Paul Ryan's approval numbers, and in connection with that, increasing the Democratic lead on the generic ballot? That's one of the things that we'll be really interested to see as we go about this national poll this week.
Very interesting. Thank you for that. David?
Hey, Tom, speaking of the polling you're going to do and the House members, if you will, we've learned a lot about the Freedom Caucus over the past few days. Has there been any polling on that or maybe other subgroups within the Congress or Senate that has been done, or do you think it'll start to where people poll on things like the Freedom Caucus more?
I definitely haven't seen any polling on it. I think that's the kind of thing that for political junkies like us, we know who they are, but I don't know if they have enough prominence to have sort of broken through with the public at large. So it would be interesting to see if that's something where voters are becoming more aware of some of those subgroups. But definitely, you know, what we see with Congress as a whole is that it's incredibly unpopular, and obviously, as has frequently been the case over the years, but Congress as a whole, as an entity, has an 18% approval rating, 64% disapprove, and then the leaders in both the House and the Senate are very unpopular as well. Paul Ryan has a 34-48 approval rating, Mitch McConnell has a 20-50 approval rating, and what I'm definitely going to be very interested to see is if that 34-48 for Ryan, which already has been on the decline, sort of declines further. But, you know, it's interesting to see, even with people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, that between 20-30% of voters aren't even familiar with them, even as sort of the faces of their bodies. So that's one of the challenges with trying to poll about congressional stuff nationally, is that voters really just don't pay all that much attention to it, although they may be paying attention to it a little bit more right now than they usually are.
Yes, we mentioned earlier in the show about the special elections, and it'd be interesting to see if in a low turnout, you know, you think voters would know a little more of the ones that actually can turn out these special elections. Can the Freedom Caucus be used to help or hurt Republicans in both the Georgia 6 and the Montana race? Well, let me ask another question. You did a lot of work on net favorability of media news sources. And among ones that probably would not be considered pro-Trump, CBS had the best net credibility at 25, CNN had the least at 15, but then ABC, NBC, New York Times all ranged in there. What did you find made the 10-point difference or caused the spread? Why was CBS more and CNN less, even though probably what they report is fairly consistent and wouldn't be reinforcing the Trump agenda?
Sure. I think the difference between those two things is that Trump has really gone out of his way to attack CNN. So I think that it's even more negative with his voters than some of the other ones, because you think about the two outlets that Trump likes to attack the most. It definitely, very much seems to be the CNN and the New York Times. Like when he's going on the attack, those are his two favorite ones to go after. So, for instance, 21% of Trump voters think CBS is credible, 64% think it's not credible. But then you look at CNN among Trump voters, it goes down to 17% who think it's credible and goes up to 72% who think it isn't credible. So I think CNN, in terms of the TV outlets, is probably a bit of a victim of Trump going so far out of its way to attack them all the time.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that CNN, even though the belt of the Republican Party, their strength is in the South, CNN is this Atlanta-based news source, and Fox News is based out of New York. And knowing how the average pro-Southern, more conservative voter thinks, it seems like CNN could kind of have a little fun and use that to their advantage. But I don't know if that'll work. But I do find all that interesting. Before we let you go, I wanted to see if Catherine or Tim had any more questions. Tim, Catherine?
I'm good.
Anything else?
Yeah,
you want to
I would like I would like to ask one more. Somebody wanted me to ask you this tonight, Tom. We got a couple of states with some rather important votes this year in gubernatorial races. When are you going to start heavily polling those races?
I don't know how much polling we're going to do of them, just because we're really moving with most of our state polling, we're moving towards the clients got to pay us to do it instead of doing as much sort of free polling as we have done over the years. I guess we're getting tighter on the business side, but I definitely think that Quinnipiac will be doing regular polling in both of those states, which is great because a lot of the time in gubernatorial races, you don't get a lot of public polling sort of coming out. And I think what we're seeing from the early stuff, especially in Virginia, is that it may be a tough road for Republicans because right now none of the candidates for governor in Virginia are particularly well known. The Democratic candidates have less than 50% name recognition, and the only one of the Republicans who might be very well known at all is Ed Gillespie, just from running last time around, but for the Senate. But we're generally finding in these early polls, which almost function as a generic ballot because the candidates are so little known, that Democrats have a 5 or 6 point lead in some of these early hypothetical matchups. So I think it's sort of the Democrats' race to lose. And then New Jersey, I have a hard time imagining in this political environment being particularly friendly to Republicans. It's not like they have some sort of top-tier great candidate they can run, and obviously New Jersey is a pretty Democratic state to begin with, and you combine that with it being a Trump world, I think that Republicans are really going to struggle in that one. So, we'll see how the political climate unfolds over the next 7 months, but I have a feeling that Democrats are going to have a election night in November that they can feel pretty good about, and we'll just see how much of a building block that is for next year's elections.
And a final quick question about governors. How's your own new governor, Cooper, doing with the public in North Carolina?
He's doing all right. About 45% of voters approve of him, about 35% disapprove. Certainly those are better numbers than Pat McCrory had at any point during his last 3.5 years in office. And the issues that Governor Cooper's been focusing on are issues that voters agree with him on. He's been very visible in wanting to repeal HB2, and we only find that 30% of North Carolinians support HB2, so voters certainly will go along with him on that. In his first few weeks in office, he was very vocal about expanding Medicaid, which is something that about 60% of voters support, only 30% oppose. And we certainly saw this week in Congress what voters feel about messing around with Medicaid. So I think that Cooper's on the right side of voters on that. So I think he's off to a very solid start.
Oh, that's great to hear.
That's
with that, let me throw it back
great
to David.
David.
Yes. Well, Tom, we want to thank you again for coming on the Kudzu Vine again tonight. And public policy polling, if you can Google it, you can go to Tom's site, Twitter, all these different things. But thanks again, Tom.
Thank you all.
Tom.
Take care. Yep.
Thank you, Tom.
Too. Yes. Well, we also thank Tom for coming on when his number one college basketball team was playing. We didn't even realize that that we booked, because I follow pro basketball, but not college, so I didn't even know about that one. Well, but Thomas, even though he might have had an eye on the TV, he still did a wonderful job, so kudos to him. Well, let's pick it up, and let's see if we can get through a topic or two more. And one I want to get to would be what we read this morning, essentially, that Donald Trump handed Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, an invoice for what her part of – or her Germany's part of the NATO defenses would be. I'm not sure if he put it in dollars, he put it in German marks, he put it in euros. But the fact that he put it on paper and handed it to her like she was a hotel guest leaving the stay – that may explain the cold handshake that came at the end of that diplomatic visit. And diplomatic is used very loosely after we find out about this. Catherine, what are your thoughts here?
I can't even imagine what, you know, I think it's, it illustrates that not only is the president, like, totally out of his realm, but he's also surrounded by people who either, A, like, did he come up with this idea and didn't know, and he's surrounded by people that can't say no to him, can't say, no, this is really not a good idea, this is not the way the president interacts with other world leaders, this is not appropriate. So either he's surrounded by people who don't know better or that can't talk to him that way. Either way, it's very bad. You know, we count on...
Yes, Tim, your thought?
Go ahead.
Did you have another thing to say there, Catherine?
No. Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm good.
You know what I've been wondering? And I've been wondering this since the beginning. Why is this man going out of his way to insult world leaders? And it's not just her. It's everybody you can think of. I mean, man, when we're getting into the Five Eyes nations, like Australia and Great Britain, I mean, we are digging deep to insult every known government on this planet. What does he hope to gain from that? Certainly no goodwill, certainly no negotiations for trade deals or anything like that. He just insulted the leader of the biggest economy in Europe. And he thought that was a good idea. Well, I mean, went out of his way to do it. There's no point in that. Well, here I am trying to figure out if Donald Trump has a point. I never thought a president would make me run into speechless territory, but I'm getting close to getting there with this guy, because this is absurd that he would do such a thing as hand her a note and tell her that she her government owes 300 million marks in unpaid NATO money, which, by the way, was patently false. And even if it had been true, you don't do something like that. Good grief.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's two big problems here. One, if they owe NATO money, then that would mean they would owe other countries, including, you know, Great Britain, among France, these different countries that are a part of NATO. So did he give just America's portion of what would have been paid by Germany? Or was he speaking for these other countries, which would be another level of diplomatic faux pas? And then second, once again, I said it the other day when we first addressed this, is that when he tweeted about it, which it was only slightly less tacky than the handing of the invoice over, is if you think that, you know, Germany should have their own army and then they should then pay for that army, that is a reasonable discussion to have, but you have to have it in a much, much different way. There may be some German citizens that would like to have their own army, but we decided among us with other countries back in the late 1940s that after two world wars that we didn't want Germany to have their own military, and now it has been some time, but we're the ones that decided that. Germany's not the one that decided that they weren't going to pay for their own military. It was decided for them based on the actions of German leaders in World War One and World War Two. So now you're making Angela Merkel pay for the sins of past German leaders, which, given that she's one of the most popular world leaders, we pretty much don't think she's the, you know, like Hitler, if you will, even though you're making current Germany reflect what Hitler did. Catherine, do you think Donald Trump has any sense of history and how this whole thing unfolded? Or does he just see the bottom line number for the past few years?
He sees the bottom line numbers, and I think the reason he does this is because to him, I'm not in his head thing, man. I think it's all about dominance. I think he and this is one of the things that really concerns me about his presidency, is that he's not really interested in, like you said, we used the term earlier, diplomatic relationships. To him, it's all about winning and losing. So he has to dominate in order to win. And I think that is, you know, a very simplistic approach to governing, to managing, to, you know, any of these executive skills that are needed to be the president. I think, you know, the idea of winning and losing is really not part of the skill set that we're looking for. It's really about compromise and negotiation and finding common ground. And I just don't think that's in his I don't think it's part of his skill set or interest. I don't think he wants to dominate. And so that's why he does these things. That's why he, you know, goes after leaders of any country. It doesn't matter whether there are allies or not, because he wants to dominate. That's my opinion.
Well, Tim, other than with one exception, and that be Russian leader Vladimir Putin. Tim, at what point do these world leaders just come out against him and just openly say, you know, what was America thinking? How did they come to this with this guy?
Well, I don't think it's going to be much longer. Now, the world leaders that, you know, he is entertaining, and that, if you want to use that word, the world leaders, shall we say, that he's meeting, that he's having dealings with, are trying their best to treat him as they always have been accustomed to treating other heads of state, including American presidents. Perhaps some of them are thinking, well, this guy's only been in office 2 years. He's never been in political office before. Perhaps he will, you know, settle down a little bit. But I think they're going to discover to their horror that what they are getting now is what they're going to get from now on with this guy. He's abrasive. He's crude. He's like Catherine said. He surrounds himself with yes people. He does not want to hear no from anyone. He runs the agenda, runs the show. You know yourself, a guy like Mike Pence knows better than some of this stuff. That shows us right there that the president is not listening to his own vice president on anything. And it's just a sad state of affairs. And at some point down the road, this is going to cause a major, major, major problem. I just shudder to think what might happen if he really, really, really irritates, say, the Chinese or
or gets on the wrong side of Vladimir Putin and has to watch up close and personal how Putin can operate on another leader. So,
yes,
man,
especially with fearing with possible information. Well, one more thing just reported by Political Wire. They're now saying that the Freedom Caucus may force a government shutdown over funding of Planned Parenthood. So read up on that, because we may be discussing a government shutdown in future weeks. And I'm sure it'll be the Democrats' fault, you know, as always. But that's how, you know, bad to worse it's getting. Well, we want to thank again Tom Jensen for coming on the show, and we'll join you again next week on the Kudzu Vine.
Good night,
guys.